at Parkside Water Stop, near Newton in Lancashire, early in the morning of the 15th of September 1830, and more than 7 hours before the accident, a group of grey-skinned men could be seen working on the brand new railway, sweeping the tarnished line that would stretch from Liverpool to Australia. A stray chipping or clump of earth might throw the engines clean from the track, and they'd been out for hours clearing the way with brushes and checking for bad links and broken joints. This was the last job on the railway, and when they stepped aside, the engines would hurry past them in a whirl of delight, the hot clank of cast iron and burning steam, a smith's forge in brutal motion through a startled landscape. These men had built the bridges and laid the rails and cast the blocks and sleepers on which they ran, and their recent lives could be measured on each section of the track. They had been threatened and stoned at every mile from the Liverpool docks to Salford. The night before, Henry Booth slept with a gun by his bedside. He had reason for apprehension. Booth was the official secretary and treasurer to the Liverpool and Manchester Railway Company. He faced ridicule and scorn for his belief in steam locomotion. Ordinary people would never step on the railroad. They thought a journey at speed would crush their lungs, that the railway, violent over peaceful land, would turn a cow's milk sour. When Booth foresaw the extension of railways throughout the country, 100 lines or more, they thought he had lost his sense of reason. Booth would rise in an hour and make his way to the new station, where he believed he should be the first to arrive. But he would be mistaken, for many people were already making their way along the line, dressed as if for a carnival, their heads full of steam and sparks and the whiff of peril, and all curious to discover if the railroad would send them truly into the future, or whether it would melt itself down spectacularly before their eyes. The Liverpool-Manchester run was to be the fastest railway in the world, and the first to link two large towns. It was the first extended railway with twin parallel tracks, replacing the crude passing places on earlier lines. It was by far the most expensive and ambitious engineering project ever undertaken. It was a modern passenger railway, the longest piece of track the world had seen. William Huskisson, the Member of Parliament for Liverpool, had been advised not to attend. He had recently been diagnosed with strangury, a tender inflammation of the kidneys and bladder, lending him a constant but unfulfilled desire to pass water. He was used to this. As a child, Huskisson was malnourished and frequently laid up with chest complaints. Once, rising from his bed to do schoolwork, he fractured his arm. His horse fell on him just before his marriage. He was flattened by the pole of a carriage at the entrance to Horse Guards. In Scotland, at the residence of the Duke of Athol, he tried to leap the moat, but missed, savagely spraining his ankle and lacerating the tendons of his foot, the wrench of both permanently altering his gait and ensuring it would be many weeks before he was able to travel back to England. A while later, he fell from a horse and again broke his arm. He snapped it again not long after, this time by falling from a carriage. It was a complex fracture, and though many physicians tried to mend it, Huskisson never fully recovered its use. In 1827, Huskisson received what he called a decided attack of inflammation of the trachea, a condition that rendered his voice permanently raspy. His recovery period in France did not begin well. At Calais, he tripped on a cable and lacerated his foot. Understandably, he would have failed to detect any humour in his disasters. He was forthright and ambitious, and a man blessed with some vision. Above all, he was an extremely honourable MP, and a great supporter of his local constituents in Liverpool. After an operation at the end of July 1830, Huskisson's medical team provided him with a certificate to use against unwanted invitations. From the state of debility in which Mr. Huskisson's illness has left him, we are of the opinion that it would be extremely hazardous for him to undertake a long journey or to incur any abnormal fatigue or exertion for some weeks. Huskisson noted this advice and shortly afterwards resolved to attend the opening of the railway, an engineering feat he proclaimed the most impressive of his lifetime. His wife, Emily Huskisson, had never been to Liverpool before, and her husband was eager to show what it had become in recent years. On Monday, the 13th of September, the couple took a pleasure trip on the Mersey, whereupon Mrs. Huskisson noted in her journal how We embarked early in one of the steamboats in order that I might have the opportunity of seeing to the best advantage those magnificent docks and quays of Liverpool, those wonderful emporiums of her wealth and industry. She was informed that the dock trade would double with the opening of the railway, but she found it difficult to imagine how this expansion could be accommodated. In the afternoon, with her husband called away on political business, she was persuaded to visit the magnificent public cemetery. Consecrated 18 months before, it stood in the shadow of St. James's Church, at one end of Hope Street, and was known locally for its catacombs and the Doric architecture of its small chapel. A few days later, it would be known throughout the country as something else, the place where Mrs. Huskisson agreed to bury her husband.